Newsflash. Bill Clinton tells the truth about Obama in a scathing rebuke to Barack. President Bill Clinton decried his failed two terms, referring to them pointedly. But if you believe we can all rise together, if you believe we've finally come to the point where we can put the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us, and the 7 years before that when we were practicing trickle-down economics and no regulation in Washington, which is what caused the crash, then you should vote for her, meaning Hillary. Now, here is fascinating political theater, my friends. First, while Bill obviously will be forced to walk back his claims about Obama's two terms, there will be no walking back the damage from the soundbite. Second, this statement rips the scab off the unhealed wound from the past war between Clintons and Obama. Third, this statement might portend the eventual indictment of Hillary for state secret email law breaking, or could cause Obama to do so. You heard it here first, friends. That's right. This attack, which will be imputed to Hillary, could be the final straw that broke open the indictment. Fourth, this very bitter, ugly, and plausible statement could be the shot across the bow, warning Barack that Hillary is frustrated over a lack of support, meaning it's time to go out on her own. Well, whatever, it is an ominous statement and development for the Democratic Party, undoubtedly causing shudders across D.C. liberal enclaves. That Obama is currently in Cuba apologizing for the U.S. is no shock. Neither is his being on the start of one of his many epic world tours, spending countless millions again with his family. Yet, Barack's good luck and ultra success in the world's most powerful and influential and rich country has not seemed to ease his sense of aggrievement or need to punish his benefactors. What exactly is wrong with Barack? Is he, for example, an abuse survivor? Was he brainwashed as a child? Is he mentally ill or even spiritually possessed by some great evil? Perhaps we will never know. In the meantime, our current Prez 2016 tour hits primaries in Arizona and Utah today. Can Trump gather enough delegates to wrap it up before the convention? Will he have a brokered convention? And is there any chance on his way to the nomination, Bill Clinton will become his biggest secret ally? Seeing as how they're friends, who knows? Unlikely, but not impossible. And a tired, frustrated old man still itching to get even on the claims, the past claims that he was a racist. Stay tuned, sports fans. Well, good morning to you. This is Kelly 609. As you've heard, there was a devastating indictment laid out by Bill Clinton of Barack Obama's two terms. And the most shocking thing was that it was true. What he basically said was just undeniable. We've had a terrible time under Obama, and the fact of the matter is Obama could not be more smug or self-satisfied. And after hearing what Bill Clinton said, he can't feel good, because at some point the truth of the Obama administration is going to come out, and there's going to be nowhere for Barack Obama to hide except behind his smug, inane smile and his just addiction to talking down to people and coming up with stupid public policy outcome, you know, public policy programs and foreign policy and all the other crazy and dumb things that he does. It's incredible that his popularity is around 50% still, but that's because the media has protected him low these many years. And now, at some point, it's all going to end, folks. At some point, somebody's got to point out that the emperor has no clothes on. Anyway, we've got breaking news, though. Two massive explosions at the Brussels airport, and many people have been injured and killed. I've got a clip for you on that. And don't forget that they had just arrested this mastermind of the Paris bombings, or the Paris shooting, pardon me, the Bataclav theater. So I've got a few clips for you here. At 6:11 on the 22nd day of March 2016, and 523, 1450. But check this out.
When we heard those explosions, we thought there could be any other explanation but a terrorist attack. We haven't had that confirmed by the authorities here, but certainly by the way that they are responding and the advice we have been given to leave hand luggage, that kind of stuff, that would suggest that they are also treating this as a terrorist attack. Although, again, I should stress that hasn't been confirmed at all. Now, there seem to be a number of coaches out here on the airport. We've moved out of the building now, Sarah Jane. We're just moving past rows of planes, which, of course, have been grounded as a result of this. And people appear to be getting on buses. I'll just see if I can have a word with a few people at the moment. Did you hear what happened? Did you hear what happened? There was a bomb, you see. Were you close to it at the time? Were you close? Were you near Saint Laurent? Okay. I think this woman thinks there were four explosions. I only heard two. Other people think there were only two explosions as well. But they are, there's no doubt in those people's minds that it was a bomb. In which case, of course, a terrorist attack here at Brussels Airport in the heart of Europe, the capital of Europe.
All right, so there has been a massive explosion at the Brussels Airport and two explosions, and it's been confirmed, I believe, already that it was done by, that it was the work of a bomb. And also that someone had said that they claimed they heard Arabic being spoken immediately before it happened. Now, here is a little bit more on that.
At the airport in Brussels, Belgium, led to this scene.
We're now getting word on the casualties. Nina Criscolo has the update now from the alert desk. Nina.
Scott, Kylie, we have quite a few updates just in the last few minutes. We know at least two explosions are being reported at the main airport in Brussels. Federal police say to CNN, quote, there has been an explosion and, quote, something has happened. It's unclear what caused the explosions or if they're related to terrorism. Some media reporting the blast happened at an American Airlines desk. You can see people running from the building in this video, black smoke, windows blown out in the background. Media in Belgium is reporting casualties and injuries, but it's not clear how many. One witness reports seeing about 19 or 20 stretchers carrying people and also luggage trolleys being used to transport the wounded. Some others say at least dozens wounded. The airport is currently being evacuated and a disaster plan has been initiated. Recently, the airport Twitter account said this, quote, don't come to the airport. Airport is being evacuated. Avoid the airport area. Flights have been canceled. All airport operations have been suspended until further notice. Here's a photo from inside the airport. Media outlets in Belgium are reporting that more bombs have been found on the property. One also said shots were fired and shouts in Arabic were heard before the two explosions. Just minutes ago, the Belgian Interior Minister raised the terror level to maximum in wake of these explosions. This comes just days after the arrest of Salah Abdeslam in Brussels last Friday. He's a suspect in the Paris terror attacks last year. We're going to continue to follow this and bring you each detail as we receive it, up to the minute updates right here on Daybreak. Kylie, Scott.
All right.
And, you know, just absolutely amazing. The just continual war across the world from radical Islam. Here's a little bit more on the evacuation. And from this airport, which is called evacuation actually at Malbik Metro Station. And here we go.
If you stay with me here, because actually we're going to cross now.
And this is a clip from France 24, but I'm having a little hard time keeping it on.
To one witness who was at one of the metro stations, Evan Lamos, you're joining us now. Can you tell me what metro station you were at?
Sure. I was on the metro in between Arlois and Malbec. So I was on the metro that was traveling on its way towards Malbec when we heard an explosion.
And can you, was it a very loud sound? Can you describe for us the nature of it?
it wasn't very loud. We felt a sort of small blast of air. It wasn't more than if you would stand in front of a house fan, but my ears did pop. And then we heard immediately the metro stopped, the power shut off. The metro stopped, didn't go any further. There was immediately a message on the metro that came on saying there was a disturbance on the line, and they were going to fix it as soon as possible. And then we heard some soft thudding in the distance, so not anything particularly loud. It was much quieter than I would have thought.
And so what were the next steps? What happened next? Did people evacuate you off the train? How did it proceed after that?
So there was a few minutes of waiting as we continued to hear this message that there was a disturbance on the line and they were doing what they could. Then there was someone who came from the front of the metro to the back. I was at the very end of the metro. They opened a door there at the back of the metro, installed a ladder so that people could climb down, and then everyone started evacuating everyone. So.
All right. So that is from the metro underneath the airport, and here is from inside the tunnels of Malbec Metro at the time where it's filled with smoke currently.
This picture's coming in from Quentin Janelle. This is believed to be near the Malbec Metro station. These are people going down into the tunnels to try to help people down there. It's the terror that it causes amongst people watching these images that the terrorists want to see, isn't it? That we're succeeding in the sense we're broadcasting these pictures.
Yes.
They're being shown across the world. We're all looking at them, and we're all quite frankly feeling quite terrified about going out in public transport.
Well, that's right. But on the other hand, of course, it means that people will be alert, will be looking out for things, will tend now to report anything that they deem suspicious. So there is an upside to publishing these sort of images. But yes, they're very terrifying. I remember talking to a police officer at 7-7 who was on his way to a course dressed in plain clothes, and he actually he's made his way through the police cordons because of his warrant card, and actually got down and was helping people in one of these trains that was bombed. And it was very, very traumatic for him, very brave of him, but very traumatic for him to go down there and see this sort of scene, but probably worse, because you've got people trapped in stations who are in agony, who are crying out for help. You have to triage them. You have to look, who can I save? Who can I help? Who is beyond help? So very, very difficult for those first on the scene. And I can remember that officer's account vividly.
And so when you're looking at this, there's the front of the airport, the windows are all blown out, which says to me that there must have been a lot of deaths in there, you know, because you don't have that kind of destruction, you know, without some pretty powerful blasts. And if it was done, and they say it was done at the possibly at the front of the American Airlines counter, that means that it was right around the people. It was now. It sounds to me like it may have been also with bombs in other places. For example, there must have been some bombs that were done down in the subway. So I don't think that there's any, there's just got to be a lot of casualties there, and obviously probably some of being American. It's an international airport. Here's a few more clips for you. And they're just showing pictures of ambulances and police cars and stuff at the airport on that one. Now, here is a little bit more footage from outside the Zaventem airport after suicide blast. And it's showing people being put onto stretchers. And one stretcher after another being brought up, emergency personnel walking up and carrying people on those emergency stretchers, the ones without wheels.
After two explosions at the departure hall of Brussels Airport Tuesday morning local time, another blast has been reported at a metro station in Malbec. Both the airport and the metro system have been shut down. The blast come just 4 days after a suspect in November's attacks on Paris was arrested in Brussels. Belgian police have been on high alert since the arrest. Pictures and videos shared on social media show smoke rising from the departure hall. All windows were shattered by the blast. Several sources are reporting different numbers of casualties, but there is at least one dead.
So there's got to be, obviously there's got to be a number of people that are dead there, and they're just, we're just finding out about it. But anyway, this is terrible. Absolutely amazing that these people, it just seems like they are never, obviously they're never, they never get their fill of killing. There's always more and more killing that they're going to do. It's just so, it's scary, Anyway, we'll take a break here. And Kelly O'Connell, 622 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. If you haven't heard, if you just tuned in, breaking news, a large bombing at the Brussels International Airport and also in the related subway system underneath it. And they've found a couple of bombs that went off in the airport and then more in the subway. And they found more bombs that did not go off. So we'll keep you posted on that and be right back and have a little bit more on this.
Out on the town or in for the night, AT&T helps keep everyone connected.
All right. The Los Angeles Times is reporting now. We've got some updated just from a few minutes ago. In the last hour, at least 28 killed, scores injured as terrorist attacks hit Brussels. Belgian officials locked down the capital, Brussels, after a series of terrorist attacks struck the city early Tuesday, leaving more than two dozen dead and scores injured. The first attack came at roughly 8 a.m. when two explosions hit the Brussels airport. And Brussels public prosecutor said a suicide bomber had caused at least one of those explosions. And an hour later, a separate explosion struck the Maelbeek metro station located near the political hub of the city and close to European Union institutions. And a spokesman for the Brussels transit system said 15 had been killed and 55 injured in that attack. And so they're asking the residents of the city to stay inside. And it says here the incidents, and this is from the LA Times, the incidents come 4 days after one of the suspects in November's fatal Paris terrorist attack, Salah Abdeslam was apprehended in Brussels after 4 months on the run. And they say that he had helped create a jihadist network centered in the city and was planning fresh attacks when he was arrested. Well, obviously, the planned attacks went off because, you know, they're here they are blowing up the airport. And pictures showed sections of seal tiles had collapsed. So if you see a picture of inside there, you see seal tiling everywhere. And one of the individuals who was there said everything is devastated, nothing is left. Another person showing cell phone videos showing bloodied travelers walking in a daze or lying injured on the floor. And so anyway, it's a devastating attack for Europe. And the people who are saying that that Al-Qaeda is or ISIS is on its heels is don't know what they're talking about. And I mean, they seem stronger than ever. So anyway, just to give you an update there. All right. I'll take a little. Well, here I've got one more little clip here on this explosion.
Explosions that have been heard at the Brussels airport. The Belgian media say that several people have been injured at the Brussels airport departure hall. Divina's on the phone line. Divina, give us more details.
Yes, Nupur, this is the information that we're getting at this point of time.
Well, this is old because they don't even know the cause of it. So anyway, let's. All right, so we've got some more breaking news on this. Suicide bomber attacks American Airlines check-in desk at Brussels Airport. Blast hits metro station just yards from EU headquarters. Shouting in Arabic before explosion. More troops deployed to streets. City shut down. Phone users urged to text, not call, as networks are jammed. Just blood everywhere. It's like the apocalypse. ISIS celebrating. The whole of Europe has been hit, according to Hollande, the Prime Minister of France. Delta United reroute flights. Belgium beefs up security at nuclear plants. Palace has been evacuated. So anyway, if you're just tuning in, massive explosion at the Brussels airport, and I'm looking at a picture of it, and it is just in a shambles. All you can see is stuff lying on the ground and the front windows being just totally blown out. So anyway, we'll come back and continue on with the show, but very disturbing development there. 6:31 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell at 523-1450. All right, so I've got this incredible, incredible clip of Bill Clinton attacking Obama. Now, they have tried to walk this back already, but it's too direct of an attack. Bill Clinton talking about Obama's awful legacy. And if you heard the beginning of the show, I went through in my mind, I went through what I thought could be related to this, one of which is, what if Bill Clinton found out that they're really considering or and maybe leaning towards indicting his wife? That would be one reason to attack Obama. Another reason, I think, would be if he compared himself to Obama and found himself so much more successful in terms of the economy, in terms of popular support, in terms of actual talent as a politician, as a speaker. I mean, Bill Clinton, whenever you listen to him, whatever you think of this guy, And I know there's a lot of people out there that still resent the impeachment and all that. But if you watch him speak, he seems like he's always speaking off the top of his head with notes, if that makes any sense, that he could go in any direction at any time. Obama is glued to his teleprompter, and without it, he sounds like a puppet without somebody, you know, running, you know, with his hand up inside and moving his mouth. And Clinton is has this most incredible ability to improvise and come up with stuff. And he obviously, you know, Bill Clinton's a very, very smart guy and that just knows a lot, you know, and especially at his age, I'm sure that it irks him. And especially if you will recall, he was called the first black president, Clinton was, because he had such a great relationship with blacks and minorities and he was so down to earth. And then to come along and see Obama, the real first black president, come along. And then when Obama's campaign attacked Bill supposedly for being racist, was it in South Carolina, someplace like that? I don't think Bill Clinton has ever forgiven him for that, but it's bubbled up to the surface and it is awesome. Absolutely awesome witness it. Check this out. And I think this was in Portland, Oregon.
I literally, from the time I met her 45 years ago till we talked yesterday, she is the best change maker I have ever known. She always finds a way to make something good happen, to make people feel empowered, to buy people into the process, to make democracy work the way the framers intended for it to work. Now, if you don't believe we can all grow together again, if you don't believe we're ever going to grow again, if you believe it's more important to relitigate the past, there may be many reasons that you don't want to support. But if you believe we can all rise together, if you believe we finally come to the point where we can put the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us and the 7 years before that when we were practicing trickle-down economics and no regulation in Washington, which is what caused the crash, then you should vote for her because she's the only person who basically has good ideas, will tell you how she's going to pay for them, can be commander-in-chief, and is a proven change maker with Republicans and Democrats and independents alike.
So it seems to be a public acknowledgement of the failure of the Obama administration to, for example, it seems to be there that Bill Clinton is referring to his economics, that he's talking about failure of 7 years of trickle-down economics, which really he got it switched around 8 and 7 years. The 8 years was Bush, the 7 years is Obama, but a devastating attack. And we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. It's Karen.
Karen, good morning.
You may want to read that transcript because no sound came through when you were playing that clip.
Really?
Yeah, it was just scratchy static.
OMG. Maybe I had it up too loud. Let me reduce.
Yeah, 'cause we all really want to hear it.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm trying to create excitement. You know what I'm saying? It's like the launch of a rocket. Are you surprised that they blew up the Brussels airport?
No. This is what happens. You let all these people come in. You have no clue what's going on, who they are. This is exactly what happens. And well, this is what will happen here if you let people come in and you know, you have no idea who they are.
Well, and we've got a fiction, and we're holding on to this fiction. They don't have this fiction in the Middle East by any stretch of the imagination, but we have the fiction in Europe, and it's been transplanted over here, that we can have a completely open and safe society no matter who comes in, even without any background checks, because we have the right attitude.
No, you can't. You know, all over the different news sites yesterday, Kelly, was 60 Minutes Australia. And a crew went into somewhere in Sweden, a mainly Somali area, in a big city in Sweden, and they were attacked. And the police would not go in to assist them. They stood outside the perimeter. And this is what's going to happen here. And it's ridiculous.
Why wouldn't the police go in? I don't understand. I didn't see that.
Because it would rouse up the Somalis in this predominantly Somali enclave within this Swedish city.
And so, you know, they would rather have rapes, and Sweden has become the rape capital of the world. And
yes,
if you look at the surface, the rapes are done by Swedes. If you look underneath the surface of how they're defining Swedes, these people that have been naturalized there are being called Swedes when they're from foreign countries. All of these rapes, for the vast majority of them, are coming out of these foreign people that have come into the country, and they're almost all of them Muslim background. So you've got people coming in from the third world who do not accept the status of women, who look down on women, who believe that women are, you know, halfway between animals and people. And you've got just a completely abusive. I mean, there's a documentary that's coming out on Saudi Arabia, which is the world center of Islam. And they've got a video in there where a guy in a supermarket comes up to a woman and just knocks her down on the floor for no apparent reason. She falls falls on the ground. Maybe she was in the way of him grabbing, some beef or whatever. But she gets up and just scurries off. And you know nothing will happen to him. And the police regularly beat women in Saudi Arabia for even minor infractions. It's stunning. And then you're going to move these out of these cultures into the West, where we have women with full rights as men, working as men, and oftentimes women wearing outfits that would show off their bodies a little bit, or there's pornography on the internet or whatever. There's strip clubs and stuff. There's alcohol. There are people that are eating pork. And I think these people are absolutely overwhelmed.
Well, you know, they are. And just think about this. And I know some people on the left are just going to say this is stupid, but it's not. They've already told the citizens of Sweden and those other northern countries that the women are going to have to really consider what they wear this summer so they don't aggravate the men. That is just.
It's sickening
insanity.
To hear that. It just makes insanity. Me want to vomit when I hear that, because we're going to hand over the control of our society to a group of people that everybody around the world admits, including them, they've never had a reformation, and it's a religious society, and it is absolutely barbaric.
100%. And you know, one last thing, people think that this is we're BSing them. We're not. And what's happening with the press over there in Germany in those northern countries is that the press is not reporting the true stats of what's happening over there.
No, not the they're not. They're not. I agree.
No. Yeah. Okay. I've got to go. I've got a call coming in.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. Thanks. Okay. Good call. All right, we'll take a break here, but first, Bill Clinton trashing President Obama. And I think, you know, anybody who's lived in the country the last 8 years, please, if you're a little bit to the left, or if you're super to the left, you're just a Democrat, whatever, stop defending Obama. He's done a terrible job. We have just been under seven years of a disinterested and condescending and negative and anti-American leadership, and that's why Trump, I am convinced, having really thought about this and studied it, the number one reason Trump is rising is people are sick of being treated like mangy stray dogs in this country when we're the greatest country in history, arguably. Here's Bill Clinton attacking President Obama for his failures.
That you don't want to support. But if you believe we can all rise together, if you believe we finally come to the point where we can put the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us and 7 years before that, where we were practicing trickle-down economics and no regulation in Washington, which is what caused the crash, then you should go to work.
Well, I hope that you could hear that. If not, call in and let me know, and I'll find another clip of it. But anyway. Here is the Swedish national anthem the Belgium national anthem, La Bronkone or whatever, Bronkone. A little support for them, friends. 646, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450. We'll be back to carry on.
President Obama.
And pardon me. Always seems to be something playing in the background. We will be right back.
Notre Belgique, ô mère chérie, à toi nos cœurs, à toi nos bras, à toi notre sang, ô patrie, tout le jour, on pousse du vivre.
All right, so we're dealing with a crisis here in Belgium and Europe where there was an attack. And in the meantime, we've got in Arizona and Utah, we've got primaries for the GOP. And it is my understanding that in Utah, Cruz is up big time, and that in Arizona, Trump is... he's up, and I think that there is, and there's something like maybe around 50 delegates in Arizona, and maybe, you know, obviously less in Utah, about half, 28. I think there's 28 in Utah, something like that, and 52 in 54, something like that. So I was looking at the delegate count last night, and we're about halfway through the number of delegates. I think there's still 1,000 left. And you've got, don't forget, you've got New York, you've got New Jersey, you've got Connecticut, you've got Pennsylvania. If Trump were to get about, see, he's at 700 right now. If he got about half of those delegates for the rest of his way, I think he's in. And there's certain places like, it's proportional in New York, but Trump is up by 52 points. So, you know, Cruz is not even going to, and in Kasich is not even going to compete there. So, you know, if he gets New York, most of the delegates out of there, say get 70 or 80 out of there, that would put him at 800. And then he just, so anyway, that's, you know, at some point, it seems to me like Trump is going to get it. But in any event, you never really know. Now, I've got, man, I had a whole show put together here for you, and it's fallen apart a little bit just because of this bombing and wanting to stay on top of that. But let me go over some of the things that I was going to talk about. Obviously, the Arizona race and Utah race, and then the Stop Trump movement I wanted to spend some time on today, which I had promised. You know what? And by the way, I want to announce, I was talking to my sister, and my sister, Karen, is a very colorful character. She lives in California. She's not the sister that I usually talk about, but she's a very interesting person and works in California as a nurse, and everybody else in the family besides me lives up in Alaska. So we were talking about Art Bell, and I have not spent a lot of my life listening to Coast to Coast. You know, it's a nighttime show and everything. But when I used to listen many years ago to Art Bell, I really thought the guy was talented. I mean, he looks like a Chihuahua. He's skinny, kind of has a pencil neck and bug eyes. You know, he's not an attractive guy, but he's got a beautiful voice. And the way that he approached all of this paranormal, it's a paranormal show, you know, talking about weird stuff. And I just really enjoyed him. Now they got this guy, George Norrie, that I really don't think he can carry his jock strap, but as they say. But we were talking about that, and she is not really a super religious person, but she is so interested in the paranormal. You know how sometimes, you know, meet people like that, that I'm not saying she doesn't believe in God. I have no idea, really, but what exactly she believes in. But she's very interested in the paranormal. It seems like there's people. One time I saw a chart, like a Venn diagram, of people who believed in UFOs, and it was almost totally separated from people who believed in traditional view of God and everything. So anyway, everybody has some
explanation in their mind, but there is, anyway, I figured what I'm going to do on Wednesdays, at least part of the show, Weird Wednesday, because I know that, because she was telling me, you know, there's a lot of people who can't listen to Art Bell or they would like to listen to some of these nighttime shows. So she said, why don't you open up the show a little bit to, you know, stories of paranormal, weird stuff, let people tell their own experiences. And I thought, yeah, it's kind of cool. You know, I can kind of insert that in there with everything else. So tomorrow is Weird Wednesday. All right. I am looking for... got a clip here. No, I didn't really organize my clips like I should have. Just got like hundreds of clips here. Looking for where... I'll just have to Google it here. Well, and I'm not going to do it. So I was going to play a clip of this statement that was said by Raul Castro, which is in Spanish, and with Obama there. So anyway, one of the things that I found entertaining and I found this to happen again and again, and this is kind of quintessential, and we've got to take a break here, but Obama getting dissed by the Castros at the airport. Obama puts his legacy on the line by going to visit these people and they don't even meet him at the airport. I just find that side splitting that there's been so many times, you know, Obama has more respect here in America than he does anywhere else. And I don't think people really understand what a clown, you know, when you're seen as continually kind of bowing down to foreign leaders and making amends with enemies and stuff, you're not highly respected. And that's the situation we're in. Anyway, let's take a break here. Running out of time, but we'll be back. And we'll take you out with the National Anthem of Belgium. Pour l'amour de mes immortels, le roi, la loi, la liberté.
Well, good morning, 7:06. Yeah, it's 7:06 here, and we've got we're fortunate to have Walt Rubel here this morning. And Walt and I were just discussing a couple of things. One was the attack in Brussels, and the other one was the attack from Bill Clinton on Barack Obama.
Yeah,
wow.
Politics. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like I was saying off the air, I just think that he when Bill Clinton was when Barack Obama was running 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and Bill Clinton was the explainer in chief, and everybody talked about how he was the best politician in the world and all this and that. And I think he is when he advocates for anybody other than his wife.
All right. So what's going on here? Is it passive aggressive?
I think we saw it 4 years ago when she ran and he went to South Carolina and he ruptured these bonds with black voters that he had spent decades building up. Obama won South Carolina, and he said, well, you know, Jesse Jackson won South Carolina. So I just think that he is way, way too close. He is, always speaking from his heart and never from his head. And we should play it. We should let people know what we're talking about.
Well,
here.
I mean, I've played this.
Okay.
So the first time I played it, people said they couldn't hear it. But let's play it again. And this is Bill Clinton. And I said it was Portland, but I think it must be Washington State. I'm coming to this brilliant deduction because there's the seal of the state of Washington behind him. But anyway, here we go. Bill Clinton talking and advocating for his wife.
I want to support. But if you believe we can all rise together, if you believe we've finally come to the point where we can put the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us and the 7 years before that when we were practicing trickle-down economics and no regulation in Washington, which is what caused the crash, then you should vote for her.
All right. That's basically it. I mean, the awful legacy. So it seems to me the context there is economics because he's talking about trickle-down economics from Bush. But it is a full-throated attack at the heart of Obama.
Well, and it must be economics because he certainly can't be talking about foreign policy, which is, he's advocating for his wife here, and she was the one in charge of foreign policy for the first. So, yes, like I said, I think if you were to ask him about that, he would retreat as fast as he could. He certainly doesn't mean to suggest that the last 7 years of Obama have been this terrible disaster.
Or maybe
that's
what
he said.
Maybe he does.
Well,
people, sometimes people mean what they say.
Yeah.
Here's what we've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Ken Kelly. It was nothing but unreadable static.
Oh my
goodness.
Yeah. Did you hear it last hour when I played him?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So I've got this clip from the GOP war room, and I'm just going to have to go back and find the other one that I played, which is, it's right here. Hold on. Ken, did you have anything else to say?
No, I was just going to comment that every time I hear Bill Clinton talk about his wife running for president, deep-seated notion that he really doesn't want her to win.
I agree 100%. There is something inside of the guy that I think he sees himself as special and unique and extraordinarily talented, and he resents his wife for riding on his coattails. I think he also resents Obama for pretending to be Bill Clinton.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for the call, Ken.
Interesting.
Bye-bye.
All right. So let's play this clip again for you. And this is Bill Clinton. Well, here's the name of the clip is Bill Clinton trashes awful legacy of the last 8 years of Obama presidency. Yeah. Check it out.
That you don't want to support. But if you believe we can all rise together, if you believe we finally come to the point where we can put the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us and the 7 years before that, where we were practicing trickle-down economics and no regulation in Washington, which is what caused the crash, then you should vote for it.
All right, so what was that? That was you were saying?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Leave the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us.
That's terrible.
Yeah. It certainly isn't an endorsement.
But, I mean, that's a sound clip that you can play over and over and over again. It's just a tasty little soundbite.
You think we might be hearing that on Fox?
We might be hearing that again.
Yeah.
I've got something to lay out for you here, Walt. And I know you're pretty honest with me here in the audience.
Try to be.
I feel like there is a deep vein of resentment towards Obama for some of the things that have happened over the last few, the fact that we've never really grown. This, I'm just telling you the perception.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing facts here.
Sure.
Just the perception that we haven't grown, but also there's this sense that Obama looks down at people, talks down at people, has to apologize. As a matter of fact, he just went to Cuba and said he's not opposed to hearing criticism of America, but he doesn't seem like he wants to hear any criticism of himself in America ever. But there is this sense, I think, in Democrats that they're chafing at the bit that I don't think a lot of Democrats deep down really like this guy.
Obama?
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. I don't think, if you look at the polls, it's certainly not true. And I think for Democrats, listen, it comes down to what Mitch McConnell said. I think the night Obama was elected, where their top priority was to stop him. Now, Mitch McConnell is, to me, unskilled tactician in the world.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, this is Bill Clinton that's saying this, not Mitch McConnell.
No, but that's the that's why I think Democrats have a protective reaction towards Obama. Because they think that the deck was stacked against him from the very beginning, and they think Mitch McConnell told the world that he was stacking the deck.
All right, so in response to that, I will repeat this, that I think that there's a lot of Democrats, maybe they're a little bit more moderate than you are,
I'm an independent.
All right,
I disagree with your premise, but go ahead.
That I think that there is deep down a lot of resentment towards Obama that is kind of washed over in political correctness. That's really what I think a lot of people are coming.
There is clearly deep down resentment towards Obama, but not in the Democratic Party. The polls just don't show that. I mean, it is rampant in the Republican Party, clearly.
I will repeat my thesis once again, okay, folks, so that you can hear it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of deep-rooted resentment towards this guy in the country, and some of it is in the Democratic Party, and they understand that it's terrible to have a leader who is apologizing for you and criticizing you. I think that people feel that way, and I think that Bill Clinton is giving vent to this deeply held idea that it may not have been expressed a lot in the media.
Oh, that's nonsense.
Can I finish my point?
Yeah, but it's nonsense.
May I finish my point?
But it'll be nonsense.
Well, I mean, feel free to, this is like 1984. You're restating my statement before I'm finished. It is a deeply held sense that Obama's has never committed himself to the economy. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. You kind of, because you were going down one road and then you went to another. No, I think that's completely untrue. I think, to this day, he was able to get the stimulus passed right in the first days of his presidency, and that was it. I mean, that was all Republicans in Congress were willing to work with Obama.
Folks, here is the statement of Walt. It is the fault of Republicans that Obama couldn't be successful. Now, here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Why is it so painful for you to allow me to finish this?
Because you always start with flawed premises. But
all right. Well, at least I don't end with flawed premises. there is this idea out there. He was presented as the euphoria going off when he came in, the smartest guy, the greatest speaker and everything.
Right.
If he was such a genius, how could anybody stop him?
What's your point?
It's just stated right there. If he was such a genius, how could anybody derail him? I mean, the idea that this incredibly brilliant, greatest speaker comes along, and then, you know, there's a confederacy of dunces against him, and he's totally derailed, and that's the failure.
I see what you're saying. You're saying how, if he was so brilliant, and listen, we talked about this before. I understand that during the hyperbole of an election cycle, especially, people build their hopes and dreams, and they build these people up to be greater than they can be. And did that happen with Obama? Yes, of course it did.
But hasn't Obama carried that along with the smugness, the kind of like smug indifference?
I think if you want to see smugness, then
he's not smug.
I think if you want to see it, then it's there. If you want to see confidence, then you can see confidence.
He's not smug. Okay.
Well, I think that is perception.
5-2-3-14-50. A perception is 9/10 of the law.
Well, some people see smugness. Some people see confidence.
All right. So Bill Clinton is not expressing an idea from the left at all when he attacks him like
no,
that.
No. If you're saying, does the left feel, I think absolutely that the left feels that the federal government in general has been paralyzed for the last 8 years, and that it has been virtually impossible for Obama and for Democrats in Congress to impose, to be able to get through their agenda. And so, yes, there's frustration about that. But I think, you know, you look at the statistics, you look at where we were economically when Obama took office and where we are now. And the only argument you can make is, well, it didn't get better fast enough. You can't make
is
the argument
better?
That it didn't. Of course
it's
better. By every objective statistic, it's better.
I was talking to a client yesterday, and he was going over his a very brilliant guy, going over his attempts to find work in this town, and it was just so depressing that he was putting in these resumes for jobs that he was just so overqualified for, and just, you know, I mean.
See, by every objective statistic, it's better. Now, you could give me anecdotes all day long about individual people who are against that.
Disagree.
All right, give me one that shows it's worse.
Let's
give me an objective statistic that shows our economy is worse now than when he took office.
I never said that it was worse. It's just never recovered.
Okay, give me a statistic that shows it's the same.
Pull out your statistics for yourself. Hold on a second. Got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Neil. How you doing?
Good morning, Neil. What's up, brother?
Hey, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the recession, the so-called Great Recession, was over 4.5 months into Obama's term. In June of 2009, the recession literally was over. Since then, we've had an incredibly stagnant economy, 2%. Yes, the economy is better today than it was when Obama took office in January 2009, but it has been a pathetic economy, and he has caused it with his policy. And oh, by the way, nothing that he did, because he didn't do anything in the first 4.5 months of his administration, created the getting us out of the recession. So,
okay.
I mean, that's the big picture.
So he did nothing to help, and he caused it by his policy. Now, which of his policies caused it?
Well, you're not understanding what I'm saying. He didn't do anything to get the economy out of the recession. It happened 4.5 months into his administration.
The stimulus did nothing to get the economy out of the recession.
No, the stimulus, it cost like $2 million per job that we created. The stimulus was a huge waste of money, and it's for the reasons why it stagnated the economy.
Where would the auto industry be without the stimulus, do you think?
Walt, you know, I'm sure you're not for too big to fail. I'm sure you're not for big fat banks.
You're correct.
Get bailed out if they can't compete. That's exactly what happened. The General Motors should have went through a bankruptcy procedure. They still would have been here today. They would have been stronger and leaner today. Yes, they're doing great, but they got $60 freaking billion from the government.
No, I get that. I understand that, and I think, you know, that is a fair debate to have. But what is not debatable is, first of all, the first bailout was passed by Bush. That wasn't Obama. And what is not debatable is when Obama took office, the economy was in shambles. And you can debate whether or not the stimulus was the right way or the wrong way to fix that. But you can't. What is not arguable is the stimulus did help to prop that up.
The stimulus was passed after the economy was good, after the recession was over. That's when the stimulus was passed.
Well, I've seen, Neil, and I don't know if you've seen this, Walt, but I've seen studies where they put on, they compared what the economic recovery would be with or without the stimulus, and it was worse under the stimulus. That somehow, this, you know, you're shaking your head, you're saying because you spent money, the economy had to get better. But there's a macroeconomic effect of the stimulus that a lot of people said actually harmed the economy because of the way the money was spent.
You know, I can't disagree with that, with a study without seeing it. All I could say is that's counterintuitive to what I saw with my own eyes as this was happening.
Walt, it's not counterintuitive if you understand economics. If you depend on the government from taking money from the private sector, in this case $800 billion from the private sector, and then throwing it back into the private sector and saying, see, we're creating a net gain in wealth, it's ridiculous. That's why it did not create new wealth, and it stagnated the economy.
No, I understand that, but I also understand that Lehman Brothers went under. Everybody saw their pension plans going to heck. All of the cities and municipal pension plans, all of that was going under. And so I think it's very easy now, years removed, to say, well, you know, we should have tinkered this way or we should have tinkered that way.
Can I ask you guys one thing, though? When we've heard the great almost second depression. Was that at all overblown? Was the claims of that? Because it's hard to prove something that doesn't happen right. That you said would have happened. You know what I'm saying?
All we know is what did
overblown.
Happen.
And oh, by the way, one of the statistics you can use to say things are much worse than they are today is that we have 47 million people on food stamps. We have 90-plus million people who are underemployed or unemployed. Our labor force participation rate is the worst since the mid-70s.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Now, the question is that all the fault of the president, or is that the fault of a president and a Congress who weren't able to work together for whatever reason?
In other words, the Republicans' fault is one of the arguments.
I said weren't able to work together for whatever reason. I didn't say the Republicans.
No, but I was kind of bringing forward the argument that was made a little bit earlier. Neil, do you buy into the idea at all that the Republicans frustrated this president and he had a number of good things that he would have done?
It takes two to tango, and Obama had 2 years in office with complete control of the Congress and the Senate. He did what he wanted to do, and it didn't work.
Well,
the idea that we should get...
I'm sorry, but all I was going to say was because of the filibuster rule, he had complete control the same way that the Republicans have complete control now. Now, it is true that before Scott Brown got elected, and I forget exactly when that was, that the Democrats, if they stuck together and had no defections at all, could have beaten a filibuster. But that was right when he was dealing with this economic collapse. And so this idea that he could have done immigration and he could have done all of these other things that are on the wish list, he really couldn't.
Walt, we're kind of talking about two separate things, but let's be clear here.
Neil,
Obama's idea in the first 2 years of fixing the economy was the ACA and the stimulus package.
Listen, now, Neil, I'm about 10 minutes over break. You want to hang on or do you want to? Are you gone?
It's up to you. I'll hang on, sure.
Well, I'll put you on hold. Thanks. Folks, sorry about that. Got to take a break at some point. You know, it is advertising a driven medium. But here's the national anthem of Belgium one more time, because we're supporting our brothers and sisters in Belgium during this attack.
Notre Belgique, ô mère chérie. À toi nos cœurs, à toi nos bras.
Neil.
Yeah.
When we come back, just be ready to sum up your argument, and Walt's going to sum up his argument that we want to shift over to terrorism, okay?
Yeah, you bet. Sounds good.
Okay. Must be so frustrating. All right, folks, we've got Neil here, and Neil is going to sum up his position, and Walt is going to sum up his position, then we're going to move on to talk about terrorism. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, the economy in 2009 was, the recession was over 4.5 months into Obama's presidency. He tried to fix the economy by doing the stimulus package, Dodd-Frank, and the ACA. He got all that he wanted his first 2 years when he had control of the Congress.
Obamacare.
And it did not work. We've had a stagnant economy, and we still got millions of people underemployed or unemployed and on food stamps.
Yeah. Okay. So, Walt.
All of that is true. Dodd-Frank, everything that he was able to do and this is my frustration, is that everything he has been able to do, starting with Obamacare and Dodd-Frank is certainly another shining example of that, has been such a compromise that it has been ineffective. I mean, I agree with that. I think
ACA was not a compromise.
Oh, boy, the ACA was such a compromise. I mean, starting with the public option that they gave away.
Obamacare is what we're talking about. Okay, so
when you go from single payer to what we have now, that is such a compromise.
How would you rate the economy now, Walt?
Lagging, sluggish, kind of like everybody else.
But that's what Neil is saying. We've been having that for 7 years.
Yeah. No, I started by saying that it has not improved as fast as, you know, it should have, as most people believe it should have, and as I believe it should have.
Neil, last, to give you the last statement.
All right. Obama has doubled the number of regulations, too, on the federal level, and that's another reason why the economy has been lagging for 7 years.
All right. Thanks for the call, Neil. Have a great day. Drive safe.
Hey, guys. Bye.
Okay, bye. All right. I got a little clip or a little statement here from Forbes magazine. Start with the broadest measure of economic progress, growth, and output. The chart below is showing that it just says Democrats used to disparage the Reagan expansion as nothing special, yet the growth rate over the first 25 quarters under Reagan was 34% versus 14.3%.
Yeah.
Almost a third under Obama. So anyway, we'll let maybe we can do a whole show on economics.
I will come better prepared.
I will too. I mean, yeah. I'm sitting there not having any statistics. Well, I just know that to replace jobs, we have to have 3% growth.
Yeah.
Overall, and we've never really sustained that. But we'll take a break here. We're going to come back and talk about terrorism because. You know, we were talking about it before the show and Walt said some things that I thought were provocative that I think that you'd like to hear about, and we'll be right back. Well, Walt's always saying something provocative, but we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523 1450. Great call by Neil, and we'll be right back. It's Kelly. Who's this?
Hey, this is Neil. I didn't want to bother you guys on the air again, but I do have one more thing to say. Can Walt hear?
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Walt, first of all, sorry to get emotional, but you know how it is on radio. Thank you. You've got a little time to talk. But, hey, one more thing that people don't understand about the great crash in 2008 was it was caused by the housing subprime mortgage problem, correct? But if you look at the root cause, that had nothing to do with the recession. The recession was over, like I said, 4 months into Obama's term. The problem with the housing problem, the collapse, was government manipulation and social engineering with quotas with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
There was some of that. The problem I have with what you're saying, you know, when you keep saying the recession is over, is that is such to be a random number. I mean, it's like when people get upset when Obama is 7.8. You know, when you say the recession was over,
you're coming in and out.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I have a problem when you say the recession was over. I mean, that is such an arbitrary number. It's like when people on the right get mad when the left talks about the unemployment rate going down. I mean, it certainly didn't feel like the recession was over 4 months into his presidency. If you were to ask people on the street at that time, hey, is the recession over? I don't think they'd have said yes.
Yeah, but Walt, we have to go by the same standard we've always gone by. Two quarters of positive GDP growth, and that's exactly what it was, and we've never dipped into a recession since then. So,
no,
I mean,
understand.
It's kind of hard to argue against the statistics.
Well, then you can't argue against people saying the unemployment rate is going down.
You can, because the labor force participation rate, which is not the same for every administration, And you could blame this on Obama. The labor force participation rate is higher than it's been in 4 years.
Neil, you know, one thing that I think is interesting, I think in 2007 they changed the rule. They stopped counting the people who stopped looking for work as unemployed. I think if you change that back, it would give a more accurate view of what's going on.
Well, you got the U3 and the U6 numbers. They've always been the same.
Well, we're not counting people who've stopped looking for work because they're frustrated or it seems pointless. Those people are unemployed even if they've stopped looking, especially if they stop looking.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. All right, guys, I just wanted to get that in. Great discussion. Good talk.
Yeah, Neil,
thanks. Sorry,
Don't worry about it. Yeah, don't worry about that.
All right, man, have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Dude, I've got... Spirited debate with Neil Hooks. Spirited debate with Neil Hooks there and Walt. And so... Walt, let's shift gears here. Let's talk about the implications of the Brussels bombing.
Yeah, well, it's very early to say, but we don't know yet exactly what happened. One of the things I heard this morning, a possibility, is that this could have been just one guy, that he had suitcases that he took to the airport first, left them, you know, with a detonator, and then went over to the metro station with a suicide vest. That may not be the case. I guess what I'm saying is that when you look at what are the implications for our country, how would we theoretically stop something like that from happening here? I don't know.
Well, we had talked about, I said, what do we need to change? What does Europe need to change in order to make themselves safer? And you said one of the things that they need to do is give up this idea that they're going to always have open borders and just, you know, just that open borders is the number one priority.
Well, I said they have to think about that. I mean, and I preface that by saying that I understand that that is, for them, part of what makes Europe Europe. That is part of what makes them different than other parts of, you know, certainly different than the United States, where we look at the sovereignty of our borders, obviously, as something that is incredibly passionate and incredibly important for a
lot
of people.
But we're different than Europe in the way that we grew up. The states, although having their differences, grew up like a very tight-knit family.
Yeah.
And Europe grew up like a bunch of cousins.
They did. And so now, you know, they've had this experiment with the EU for, you know, what, 30 years now? I mean, a while.
And, you know, they just did a poll in France and found out that most people there want a plebiscite. They want to vote on whether they can leave the Union. There's widespread discontent in Europe over the European Union. And England is on the verge of dropping out itself.
Well, understandably so. You have, you know, nations like Germany and England that seem to be propping up debtor nations like Greece, I think has been probably the obvious, the biggest problem on that example. But also the other situation that you have is the ability for people to literally walk from Syria into Germany and Brussels and France, and they have been doing that in masses, and certainly that is something that they're going to have to get control over to some degree. There's a lot of discussion about in Brussels, especially, that there has been so much immigration that just the nature of those communities and of the country have changed in dramatic ways that people are rightfully concerned about.
And you're getting kind of this mediocrity that's coming in. Instead of having differences between countries as much, there's this stale mediocrity. Having lived over there during the transition, I just, you know, I mean, there was a lot of corruption between the poor countries and the rich countries.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And they had, when I was living in Ireland, they'd supposedly given them $2 billion to fix the roads. And there was just, it just seems like a few miles of road that were repaired. It was crazy.
Yeah. The bigger issue, I think, for us, though, is, okay, you know, we we have certainly dealt with this at Boston Marathon. We have dealt with it at San Bernardino. These types of attacks, it seems to me, are, you know, we call them sophisticated, and we talk about people being masterminds and that kind of hooey. I don't think it takes all that much sophistication. I don't think
they're calling it a coordinated attack in which 34 people are dead.
Well,
and
that's true.
Firefight going on, and
there's a firefight going on now.
There was a firefight, okay. But I mean, I find it hard to believe that one person pulled this off.
Well, that was one of the things that was discussed this morning before I came in. And as is always the case with these kind of events, you know, information is sketchy and they just don't know. But I think about this all the time, and I'm sure people who are charged with stopping it lose sleep about this all the time.
Well, you know,
I mean, essentially any place where people gather is a soft target. And how often and how easy would that be?
All right, I got to ask you a hard question then.
Yeah.
What are the let me ask you a very hard question, the answer which we'll pick up when we come back. But I mean, how about doing something about bringing all these Muslims into Europe? I mean, we'll get Walt's answer to this. It is one of the great dreams of, I think, modern liberals, is we're going to have a universal society around the world where race and creed and religious belief don't matter. But how realistic is that? At 7:40, we'll be back to hear Walt's answer. It's Kelly. Who's this?
Hey, buddy. This is Neil. I have one more thing to say to you guys, if you got a minute.
Go ahead.
Hey, I know I'm like a sticky booger, but this is kind of important, too, with regard to the economy. You could very well argue that the main reason the economy was good or improving, stagnant, but improving the last several years, was because of the oil and gas boom. And now that the oil and gas boom is not so great because we flooded the market and the supply is high and the prices are low, many economists think we're going to go into a recession this year. So to blame Obama for the goodness in the economy when he was fighting against oil and gas the last 7 years, I think everything points to the fact that he has nothing to do with how good the economy is right now. As a matter of fact, it should be much worse. Anyway, oil and gas is a huge consideration.
Thanks.
Fascist Christians for voting Trump, evangelicals have not been listening to their
God.
He thinks he...
Who can put together some kind of crude explosive device, go into the middle of a group of people and detonate it. I don't know how you stop that entirely.
Well, I mean, okay, so let me pick up from where you left off on Europe. If I'm the king of Europe, I say we do what Trump's, some modification on what Trump said. We've got to halt the importation of Muslims for a while until we figure out what's going on. And you said earlier you can't kick them out.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, if you're in Paris, from what I understand, every day there are in these Muslim enclaves, there are entire streets that are shut down by people laying down prayer mats and getting down on their knees and praying to God. And I mean, if I'm the leader, let's just say I'm an atheist leader of Paris, and I look at that, I don't have a dog in the fight in terms of religion. I look at that and I am absolutely alarmed in saying what used to be a private expression with some public symbolism has now taken over our city's streets.
Yeah. And that has been something that they have really fought with. It seems like more than we have, this whole deal with assimilation.
Yeah.
And they've had laws over there that you can't, the girls.
Burka.
Yes, that's right. That those are outlawed. And I think it's just because that they have had such a more people coming in quickly and has changed the communities, like I said, over a couple of decades.
Here's my issue, is if you're bringing these people in and they want to come into your country because it's in some measurable level, your country is better. It's more free.
Right.
The economy is stronger. The society is more robust. You don't want them to come in to make it more like the Middle East.
Yeah.
You want to keep your distinctives. And it seems to me that they have bent over so far backwards to make them feel at home that they're almost capitulating to their culture.
I think there's an argument that can be made for that. And I'm saying that as somebody who's never been to Europe. So take it for what it's worth. I am looking at this as an American watching these events play out on television. So I'm not presenting myself as an expert on Europe. Let's get to if you are the king of America, though. Is Trump right? I mean, can America have some kind of exclusion, some kind of ban based on a person's religion?
The thing that caught my ear on that wasn't banning Muslims. It was really fixing the process. I mean, you're not going to permanently ban Muslims from coming in, and we don't really want to do that. But what you want to do is figure out a way to sniff out which ones are more likely to,
Absolutely agree.
Yeah,
absolutely agree.
And the beauty of America is bringing people into our experiment and persuading them to join it, right?
That's right. It's the melting pot.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's made it beautiful. So we'll take a little break here. And with Walt and actually agreeing a little bit, it's scary. It could be a sign of the apocalypse.
Serious times. I mean, with serious times, you got to get a little sober and,
and throw in together. We'll come back and talk about the election. You want to do that little bit on
absolutely.
The. Okay, well, we got it. We got about a few minutes left. We'll come back. National Anthem of Belgium in support in fraternity with our friends over there getting attacked. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. Got here a clip from Glenn Beck. I've got a fixation. It's obviously a fixation here, but I was telling Walt about it and wanted to get his reaction and your reaction. Glenn Beck says Mormons must save America. Evangelicals are not listening to their God. Check it out.
Fight to you now. The Book of Mormon is a book that was given to us for this time in this land. And it explains exactly what it's going to look like when trouble comes. And I don't know about you, but I can put new names old names in the story, it all works. So here's what I'm saying to you. The reason why I'm bringing this up, and I've been wanting to say this for a very long time. Where the hell are the priesthood holders? Where are you? Thank you. It's time to stand up. It's time to stand up. You know what time it is. The priesthood is supposed to rise up and restore the Constitution. Now is that time. Period. The Book of Mormon trusts in you that you will see these times and you will run to the truth. I come to you today to give you this message. Utah has an incredible opportunity. So many Christians have been standing up, but all throughout the South, the evangelicals are not listening to their God. Let us raise a standard in Utah. Let us do this one thing perfectly right.
All right. So I mean, he just said right there, they've got two different gods, which is what I've been trying to ask people. When you hear Glenn Beck getting up and I do want your reaction on it, Arizona, by the way, but when Glenn Beck gets up and says that I feel the spirit of the Lord in me And I know what I'm saying is of the Spirit. And he's said things repeatedly of the nature of prophecies. And I say to people, what God is he praying to? Number one. And number two, perhaps more outrageously, I'm asking, could it be the voice of deception? I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, Lion Ted, where do you start with this? Glenn Beck will be very pleased that Ted Cruz will win Utah tonight.
It'll be a walk-off home run.
For all the good that'll do him. Yes, but the idea that Joseph Smith prophesied all these years ago that Ted Cruz was going to be,
the White Horse prophecy, the Mormon, the priesthood that you just heard referred to there, which are the upstanding and the leaders of the Mormon community, they were going to come in and save the Constitution when it's hanging by a thread, and a man on a white horse is going to come in. And I believe the prophet for this is Glenn Beck in his mind, and the person on the white horse at this point was Mitt Romney. It's now Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Like I said, he'll sell that in Utah. But Glenn Beck is just so overwrought with all of this.
I mean,
stuff.
He's just about to burst into tears. He found a kid that was fasting every Tuesday for the last 3 weeks so that Cruz would get elected president, and he hugged him and burst into tears.
Yeah. But I do think that's reflective of just the frustration of the Cruz campaign. They did think they would do a lot better with evangelicals than they have, and I think they're frustrated. They don't understand.
They are frustrated. Okay, switch gears to Arizona and Trump.
Big night, I think. You know, that everybody keeps saying, and it's true, that there's just no polling in Arizona, so nobody's willing to go out on a complete limb.
But they said that the big sign there was that Trump was up early.
Yeah.
And half the voting was done by the time the polls opened.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. The early voting is going to be huge in that state. And listen, I just think that with Jan Brewer and Joe Arpaio both giving, strong endorsements, the immigration issue, Trump has been the hero for the, the Jan Brewer, Joe Arpaio folks.
And the Border Patrol is saying this guy's got our back. And I mean, the Border Patrol is obviously a huge issue in Arizona, probably more so than here. It seems like
clearly
they have more problems with illegals coming in. And they say
they have
70 miles to the border is kind of a no-go zone in Arizona.
Yeah, and we kept hearing that when the Oregon Mountains Desert Peak Monument was, we kept hearing that all the problems that they had. I think it's the Oregon Pipes. There's a national park, I think it is, where they had signs up. I don't know if they're still there, but basically warning Americans about going into their own national park because of all of the traffic that they had going through there, the immigrant traffic.
Yeah.
And so, that's clearly a problem that we haven't had here in New Mexico.
Yeah, thank God. Okay, so we got 1 minute left. Your overall prediction for Trump, he takes the nomination?
Boy, I mean, it's getting close. I think Kasich is starting to frustrate the Cruz people as well, because as long as Kasich is in it and he keeps slicing off that 10 to 12%, and Trump is getting his 45%, and that's enough to win. It looks like he's going to do that all the way to the convention.
And Marco Rubio was asked if he wanted to be the vice president for Cruz, and he said, I'm not interested. I'm going to leave public life.
That's what he said. Yeah.
And I read an article. I was going to mention it more. I'll talk about it more tomorrow. But that John Kasich is a real SOB and a very rude person, and he is disliked widely in D.C., and he is presenting himself as the opposite of Trump, and it just kind of made me laugh.
I've heard those stories as well.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on today. And boy, exciting times. Folks, save some prayers for the folks,
that's right,
people that have been injured in Belgium. And a couple of U.S. senators were said to have barely missed that bombing. So thank God, goodness. Have a great day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. AM Las Cruces, KOB, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 for tomorrow to write down. And Belgium national anthem to celebrate the living over there. Have a great day. Ciao.